It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
I just want to make a love to you.
Oh, I know that one. I know that one.
And Chad P. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you say the man's nasty. I don't know if you mean he's mean or if he's walking around
mean.
With a cloud of dust behind him like Big Ben.
I think both.
Class is in.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Rock School. Hey. My name is Joe Burns, and I am a professor right here where we broadcast the campus of Southeastern Louisiana University. Sitting to my immediate right, a good friend, a former student, and one who must learn. Your name is?
Chad P.
And we got a guest here in the studio.
Yeah.
A guest in the studio.
First
who are
time
you?
Ever.
Clay Cottrell from the Bag of Blues, the bluesologist. People will listen to me every day, Monday through Friday, on the Bag of Blues. I am happy to be here doing this show with you guys today.
Let me tell you why Clayton happens to be here. This is a show. It's our second twofer of the year here on Rock School. And the reason we have got Clayton here is because he was good enough to help us out with the music that we needed to do this show. This is our covers show. And the reason we're doing this show with Clayton, the Bag of Blues, is because a lot of the music we're going to be playing today is very, very old blues music.
Yeah, blues covers.
Sure. So we're going to be playing a lot of stuff that you're going to say, I didn't even know that was a cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cream, we're going to play them. We're going to play stuff from the Yardbirds. And you're going to say, wow, that's a great tune. That's a cover? Oh, yeah. We're going to play the Allman Brothers. You guys, that's a cover? Oh, yeah. That was done a long time ago.
That's the whole purpose of this show is to learn.
Yeah,
learn.
And the thing about it is, you know, that was a cover? Sure.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to pitch the amount of influence that these old Delta blues artists actually had upon the classic rock artists of the 1960s and 1970s.
Yep.
It was huge.
Yeah, oh,
huge
yeah. Influence. So what we're going to do is talk about these artists, play a little snippet of the song that I'm sure that you out there in the listening audience know, and then we're going to play the original for you.
Cool.
And we're going to do that for two shows for you. We begin with Cream. Everybody knows the 1968 song by Cream, Crossroads. I went down to the crossroads, fell down on my knees, and everybody knows the Jack Bruce and the Eric Clapton blast out there. They didn't write it. They didn't come close to writing
that. They didn't write that?
That's all the way back from 1938. Go ahead, Clayton. Who actually wrote it?
Well, Robert Johnson actually wrote the song, put it out, recorded it. Different because Clapton come in and added the whole guitar riff to it. You know,
yeah,
that wasn't in there because the way Johnson did it was just him and a guitar, and the way he tuned his guitar and everything. Most of his song sounds like it's two people playing. The way he played the guitar with his thumb and did a lot of finger picking. So he was the one that originally put it out and put it out there. And then Clapton was influenced by it because they played it on BBC radio across the pond there. So
wait a minute. So Robert Johnson just picked up a guitar. Wrote this song and kind of picked around with it, and then Eric Clapton got a hold of it and said, oh, I kind of like that. Now let me add this, and then everybody thinks that it was a Clapton song.
A lot of people did, right. The way that Eric Johnson did that, they got that sound that sounded like two guitars, he played to an open G. And a lot of people say, well, why open G? Believe it or not, the banjo was originally a blues instrument.
Yeah.
I know country has taken it over, but the banjo is actually tuned to an open G, and the guitar took over that open G tuning, which is what Crossroads is actually written in, that open G tuning. And what he did, what Robert Johnson did, is he used multiple picks on multiple fingers, and his thumb would play a walking bass line,
yeah,
and then he would play a melody with his index and middle finger. So it always sounded like two people playing.
Okay.
I mean, real genius stuff, and he did that back from 1936. So let's do it this way. Here's a little clip of the one you know. This is the one most people know. This is from Cream. This is what Crossroads sounds like. Hit it.
I went down to the crossroads, fell out of my knees.
Well, that's the one you know. But before you heard that, Eric Clapton and Cream heard this.
I went down
sinking down, I'm sinking down. Tell my friend boy, Willie Brown. And you could say friend boy back then. If you said boyfriend, boyfriend meant the fact that you were dating a girl.
Yeah.
If you said friend boy... Friend boy actually meant that it was a male friend of yours.
My companion.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. Honest to goodness. If you said friend boy, it meant a male companion from all the way back then.
Well, I'd be this, so confused. I'd have people really looking at me. Like, well, what's going on over there with you?
Let's move forward a few years into the 1950s. Now, these two next songs we're going to talk about came out very close to one another. The original came out in July of 1954. The cover came out in September of 1954, and I'm going to tell you right up front, Clayton, I think, if you've been in my office,
right,
and you've seen those 10 records I have all put together, and I've said that somewhere in those 10 records are, or is, the first rock and roll song ever recorded. This, I think, is the first rock and roll song ever recorded.
See, that's what you think. A lot of people think that Bill Haley's song was the first rock and roll. Rock Around the Clock?
Rock
Around the Clock was the first.
And then
some people, I've actually read where some people think that Rocket 88 by Jackie Brinston and his Delta Cats, which is actually
with
Ike Turner.
Yeah, I can be persuaded that might be it, but the one I'm talking about is Arthur Big Boy Crudup and That's All Right Mama. Tell us something about Arthur Big Boy Crudup.
Now, Crudup was, that song wasn't the one that really made him famous. I mean, he was famous before then, and it didn't make him a whole lot of money, but he was a Delta blues man, which a lot of them were back then, and it, a lot of people think that Elvis covered that, like, the whole cover phenomenon back in the 50s, but he was actually
because of the race records.
Right, because of the race records, but he was actually influenced by a lot of the Delta blues artists, and he really liked Crudup's work, and that's the reason he did, one of the reasons he did that song was because of the influence.
It was Crudup. An homage.
Yeah, and he did that for a lot of artists. I mean, he covered, we'll probably do another cover that Elvis did on the show, maybe, that was actually done by another blues artist. So
we're going to do a Hound Dog cover here in a little bit.
He did that one because he really liked that one. And I think that was he was influenced instead of the studio bringing in somebody and say, hey, let's do the covers because we don't want this kind of music.
So, I got to tell you, I'm listening to all this and I almost feel let down because a lot of this music I thought was by that original artist. Didn't know that they took it and ripped it off.
No, it was a straightaway cover, straightaway cover. What's also nice about Arthur Big Boy Crudup is that he was one of the first musicians to actually gain representation by lawyers and fight the record companies over royalties.
Yeah.
And he took that fight all the way to his death in 1976.
Good for him.
Here's the one you know. This is by Elvis the Pelvis. This is the snippet.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do it, that's all right.
Oh, yes, but this was the original Arthur Big Boy Crudup on Rock School.
For you, that's all right, no mama. Any way you do, but that's all right.
That's a good sounding voice.
Yeah,
that's a good sounding voice.
I gotta tell you, man,
School.
Did you hear that that drum on that hi hat?
It's rock and roll.
I love rock and roll. Oh, I love that.
It's rock and roll. It's absolute rock and roll.
Or rhythm and blues.
Big Boy Crudup. It's rock. It's not rhythm and blues. It's rock and roll.
Now,
it's the first rock and roll record.
Now, why do you say
debate it all day?
Yeah. Why would you say that was the first rock and roll record?
Three reasons. Three reasons straight away. Number one, it's the conflagration of two streams of music.
Right.
It is a major chord progression underneath it, which shows the country influence. It is a minor lyric on top of it, a minor melody line on top of it. So it's the rhythm and blues and the country coming together. And it was one of the first songs released on 45 by RCA Victor. And it was released on a 45 that was colored orange. What RCA Victor first did when they released 45s is they released them in different colors. You see, you know, vinyl was only colored black because they colored it black.
Right.
Vinyl is literally clear. And this was released in orange, which meant rhythm and blues, which got picked up by radio stations around when network radio left to go deal with television.
Right.
So it has the country influence. It has the... rhythm and blues influence. It has the two of them coming together, and it has the technical influence of the 45 and the RCA Victor behind it, which also picked up Elvis Presley. There's just many things that go along with it, and that, to me, and it's my opinion, makes it the first rock and roll record.
So they color-coded their vinyl?
Yes.
To make sure that you knew what kind of music you were
getting? Yeah, so you can tell by the color.
And orange was blues?
Orange was rhythm and blues.
Okay, why didn't they make it blue?
Got me. I'm sure blue meant something else, but all I know is that was rhythm and blues.
See, you could get away with so much stuff by just thinking simply.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go down to New Orleans. You know I love you, so baby, please don't go.
You're enjoying that a little too much.
It. Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
Ted Nugent covered it. Oh, so many people covered it, but the original was by, can you do it?
Big Joe Turner?
Oh, you are so good. Big Joe Williams.
Big Joe Williams.
There's
so many guys. I mean, I got to look in some history. Like, there's so many blind people doing the blues as well. You have blind Lemon Jefferson and blind Willie McGee. You know,
it just meant they wore glasses.
Yeah, that's all. They weren't really blind.
That's what blind meant, yeah. But Big Joe Williams is the original that did Baby, Please Don't Go, Baby, Please Don't Go. So what do you know about Blind Joe or Big Joe Williams?
Well, you know, you got me on that one because I don't know a whole lot about him because I don't play any Big Joe Williams on my show. Which, you know, my fans are probably sadly disappointed to hear that. So
break your heart. Learn some and play him. Let me tell you what I know about him. He is a former sharecropper, or was a former sharecropper at the time, and he was huge. He was about 6'6 and about 300 pounds, and he was nasty. He was a very, very nasty man. He played a 12-string guitar.
Why are you calling that man nasty?
Because he was.
What you mean? Define nasty.
He would get into bar fights because you looked at him oddly.
Okay.
He was just. We're gonna talk about Lead Belly in just a little bit here.
Yeah.
And he was the same way. And I got a twinkle out of his eye, out of Clayton's eye, like he knows a lot about Lead Belly. But this guy would just punch you because you said hello to him, and he didn't want to be said hello to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you say the man's nasty. I don't know if you mean he's mean or if he's walking around with a cloud of dust behind him, like Big Pen.
I think both.
Okay.
But he was known for playing a 12-string guitar that he would only string with 9 strings. Only the high strings, the highest note strings, were doubled.
Okay.
And he would tune it to either a G or a D so he could actually play it with a slide. And he was known for setting up at these places and just playing, and at the end of it saying, okay, give me my check, and gone.
Yeah.
And he was at that time where he never received any royalties. It was, you know, we want to record your songs, $50, and a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah.
And get the heck out of here.
Here's a pressing.
Here's a pressing. Get out of here. But a lot of his stuff actually stuck around. The first big hit was by them with Baby, Please Don't Go, but the original was Big Joe Williams. So hit the snippet. This is the one most people know, Baby, Please Don't Go.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go down in New Orleans. You know I love you so. Baby, please don't go.
There you go. But this is Big Joe Williams. This is the original on Rock School.
Baby, please. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans. You know I love you so. Turn your lamp down low. Turn your lamp down low. Turn your lamp down low. I beg you all night long, baby.
Man, can you hear those old catgut strings
popping
against the neck of the guitar?
That almost sounded like a banjo.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, the banjo and the accordion, that's the thing. A lot of people, you think about these instruments that are today relegated to country, relegated to Cajun, Zydeco. They were all blues instruments. And you think, well, the banjo has got to be an American instrument.
No.
It's not.
No.
It's an African instrument. It was just simply Americanized and turned into into the instrument that it is.
There's only a few blues artists right now. They even play Taj Mahal and Keb Moe are two blues artists that still play the banjo in their songs and on stage.
Yeah, and it's one instrument that the guitar, you hear about all these different tunings and such. I don't know of anybody that actually interestingly tunes the banjo. It almost always just sits in G. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
We got to take a quick pause for the cause. We'll be back. If I'm not mistaken, we got lead in our belly when we get back. Am I right about that?
Oh, yes.
We're right about that. Back in a minute on Rock School. This is Rock School as we play some of the originals of some of the most famous songs of the classic rock period. Some people sit there and they go, this is a great song. How in the world did CCR think about writing this? Creedence Clearwater Revival. Well, they
influence.
Didn't.
Yeah, they didn't
write cover it. Tune, yeah. One of my favorite CCR songs is the Midnight Special.
Yeah.
And it also became the theme to that NBC television show, if I'm not mistaken. Do you remember the Midnight Special? You're a little older than the average student. Do you remember the NBC television show, the Midnight Special? They would bring on all of these
I know you're talking about. Yeah, they used to bring out the old acts from the 70s and stuff like that.
Well, they weren't old back then, but You can get it on DVD now.
Yeah,
if you're
a
Netflix man, you can actually go out and get it. The Midnight Special, big hit for CCR, but it wasn't by CCR, was it?
No.
Who was it by, Mr. Bag of Blues?
It was by a man named Leadbelly. Huddy was his actual first name. One of the most interesting characters for me as far as blues players or folk music or root music. Ended up in jail twice, once in Texas, and actually recorded and did a song on behalf or for the governor, and the governor felt sorry for him and released him after let him go after 2 years. And then he ended up in a prison in Louisiana, and the Lomaxes, who were recording for the Library of Congress, come down and recorded just a mess load of songs that he had done.
Right.
And they went on his behalf to the governor. I think his name was O.K. Allen was the governor at the time, and he got out after like 2 or 3 years. But an interesting character, became really huge, went and recorded in New York, and wouldn't just play the 12-string guitar. He knew how to play the accordion.
Right.
He knew how to play the mandolin, the piano, the harmonica, the violin, the concerto. I mean, this guy, for being a sharecropper.
He's a wonderful musician.
Yeah.
How do you acquire the nickname Lead Belly?
Well, there's a few stories out there. One was that he could eat prison food and it never affected him at all. And the other story was he actually got stabbed in the stomach and during a fight, and it didn't bother him at all. Like he beat the mess out of the guy.
Was he like
stabbed.
A T-1000 from Terminator?
He was a tough guy.
He was a tough guy. He was one of the guys. Me and Dr. Burns had talked about this. And you didn't want him as a friend or as an enemy because you know he was just kind of a shady
either way
character.
He'd take care of. Of you.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
If you'd like to hear his original recordings, your best bet is to get a hold of a record probably now on CD called Best Loved American Folk Songs by, as you mentioned, John and Alan Lomax. We are going to play the Midnight Special by Leadbelly. It was written while he was in, as you said, Sugar Land Prison in Texas. It's about a legend about a train that, while they were sleeping, would come and take prisoners off to freedom. So here's a snippet of the CCR song that everybody seems to know.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
Well, that's the one you know, but this is what CCR heard before you heard them.
Yon come a miserable lad, kind of what do you know? Well, I know about a boy, never light on me.
Yeah, Midnight Special, that's Leadbelly. You know what other song Leadbelly did that has special meaning to me? It's House of the Rising Sun by the Animals, but when he did it, it was called New Orleans Rising Sun Blues.
Yeah.
That was the number one song the day I was born.
Really?
Yeah, even though I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, it was just sort of, I guess, kismet that I was supposed to move down here and live out kismet. Oh, yeah, live out
that.
My life.
Yeah.
I just thought I'm a
show
professor.
Off those brains.
I'm going to throw out large words the rest of the way. Now, I'm looking at Chad, whether he's going to give me a stump or not, and he's no, No, not today.
Not on this.
You want to try one?
Yeah.
You want to try stumping me here, bag of bluesmen, Mr. Clayton?
After Lead Belly finally got out of prison and actually started making a little money with his recordings and stuff, because the Lomax has made him such a huge hit with all of his recordings, he went up to, I want to say New York was where he was recording up there in New York, and he didn't have a place to stay. And one of the record execs, one of the guys, let him stay the night at his house. Now, he recorded a song shortly after that called Bourgeois Blues.
Bourgeois Blues.
What was the song about? Why did he write that song? What was it mean?
Bourgeois. That's French. I don't know, so I'm going to try to just reason it out.
All right.
Bourgeois Blues. I doubt it's about the record company. Bourgeois. Not boudoir. It's bourgeois.
No, bourgeois.
Bourgeois Blues. It's about the people who thought they were better than him in New York City.
You were close.
Oh, okay.
You're close.
Oh, half a stump?
He stayed there. He was actually staying in a white neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the guy let him stay the night, him and his wife, at the house. And in the middle of the night, they got a knock on the door. The landlord found out about it, got upset. He's like, why are you letting
an African-American man stay here?
And he got upset that it was about the upper middle class. And so he named it Bourgeois Blues.
Chad, you called. Did I get it or did I not get it?
I'd give you a 3 out of 5.
A 3 out of 5. Great.
Yeah, see,
lovely.
I wouldn't have got that. You was like bourgeois. Yeah, that's French. And I was thinking bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Yeah, that's a greeting
bonsoir.
In French. Bonsoir.
Okay. Well, 3 out of 5. I'll take a 3 out of 5. That'll get me a degree. If it's a C, it's a degree.
Yeah, that's right.
We're at the bottom of the hour. This is our cover show. It's our second twofer of the year. Let me pitch the website to you. By all means, go to kslu.org. Look for the Rock School clipboard there on the right-hand side. Click on that puppy, and you will be able to see pictures and all that kind of good stuff. Is there also a link to your Bag of Blues show?
Yes, there is a link. If you go to the students' website, there's like for staff.
Yeah.
Underneath my picture, they have the link for the Bag of Blues website as well.
Well, our guest today, a gentleman who helped us out with a lot of the music that we're playing today, Clayton Cottrer. He is the host of the Bag of Blues. Quickly pitch your show. Tell him when it's going to be on, because I'm going to be a guest on your show as a sort of a pitchback for this.
Pitchback for this.
A talent trade.
Yeah. That's right. The Bag of Blues is Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. I've been doing it for almost 3 years now.
Good for
you.
It's,
I'll graduate in May, hopefully. And that is going to be kind of sad to get rid of it. So,
well, see if you can't find a radio station and let you continue it.
There's not a whole lot of blues stations around here, but there's a lot going back towards Atlanta and Chicago and stuff. So who knows?
Well, search it out.
And I'll give Clayton his props right now. I mean, he has a passion for his show, and every year during our annual pledge drive, which we just concluded last week, one of the things that we ask all of our call-in pledgers, what are some of your favorite programs on the radio? Radio, and I'm constantly writing down Bag of Blues. So
Bag of Blues.
Kudos to you, my friend. You do a great job.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Know anything about Willie Dixon?
I know that if you would say, if somebody asked you, like, who wrote this song and a blues song playing, you said Willie Dixon, you had about a 70% shot of getting it right. He was a huge songwriter. I mean, he wrote for Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. I mean, the list goes on and on. But he also had some really good songs himself that he did. So.
He was also a Golden Gloves boxer.
Really?
That's what? Right. Yeah, he held the heavyweight title, Golden Gloves, in 1936.
It's a good skill to have for people who don't like your music.
Yeah. How many people know the song by Foghat? I just want to make a love to you.
Oh, I know that one. That one.
That's a remake?
Yes.
You bet it is. Willie Dixon did it back in 1954. You know how Willie Dixon made a whole lot of money? He would trade young men who were writing songs. He would trade the rights to their songs for food.
Really?
Really. He would actually take them out and feed them for about a week. And when the guy said, well, do I owe you any money? He said, nah, that couple of tunes you wrote, they're pretty good. How about you just sign the rights over to it?
Well, it sounds like he might have been hanging out with John Lee Hooker, who actually had like 7 or 8 aliases. So
he
knew how to work the system.
So he would actually get paid on a few of them. So let's hit the fog hat. This is what people know. Well, that's the one you know.
I would have never guessed that to be a cover.
Well, it is, and here's the original from 1954. Willie Dixon, Rock School.
Let's
VHS box set. They're all this good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they are all this good. And he is a thick, huge man out of Vicksburg, Mississippi, ladies and gentlemen, Willie Dixon.
Who was it back then? I mean, it's hard to find any of them. You know.
the delta of the Mississippi just seemed to... I mean, just relinquish musicians into the world. I don't know what it was. It just, you know, there's that old cliche, something in the water, but it just seemed to relinquish musicians into the world.
Well, I think a lot of it was, I mean, there was a lot of, back then, you know, a lot of these guys were sharecroppers, and he was like, if I can play the guitar or write songs and make money, that's a whole lot better than farming. And I've done a little bit of farming. I'd have to agree with them on that one. So.
Let's go back to 1957. You specifically came, this was one artist. I remember when I told you about the show and your eyes lit up and you said, let me help. And you started to hand over a few songs. Johnny Guitar Watson, you actually came to me and you said, now you're doing covers. Are you doing Gangster of Love by Steve Miller Band? I looked at you and I said, no. Who covered? And you kind of looked at me like, you don't know. You took
I
some
know
semblance.
Something you don't know.
You took some semblance of pride in this kind of thing. So I'm just going to let you go. Okay, tell us about Johnny Guitar Watson, the Gangster of Love, you know, that took over for the cover of the Steve Miller Band.
Well, Johnny Guitar Watson, huge artist, and he did, not only did he do rhythm and blues and rock and roll, he did funk in the 70s as well and a little bit of disco. So huge artist and a huge influence, but Steve Miller paid homage to him on at least two songs.
Right, in the middle of the Joker, he says, they call me the Gangster of Love,
right,
and that's the song.
That's his homage, and then he actually did a little cover of Gangster of Love.
I searched it out. I found it. That's the snippet we're going to play.
And it's not very long.
You know,
it's not a very long piece that he did, but that was his huge influence, and Johnny Guitar Watson was kind of influenced by T-Bone Walker, and then that kind of influenced in Chuck Berry, and then he actually influenced Guitar Watson actually influenced Hendrix and some of those guys that come up. I mean, the way Hendrix played was, if you studied Guitar Watson style, I mean, it's almost an exact styling of the way Hendrix would play on stage. So,
right.
Huge influence.
When I looked up Johnny Guitar Watson through Wikipedia, a couple of the people who are in Parliament Funkadelic even said they were trying to copy the way Johnny Guitar Watson, you know, played.
Oh, yeah, that was the interview that I read, that he actually, his guitar cord was like 150 foot long.
He's right.
Like, if he wanted to get on top of the arena, he could climb up on top of the arena.
And would do it.
And would do it if he wanted. And he was one of those guys that would play with his teeth and stuff like that behind his neck and stuff like that, you know. And a lot of people from the 60s and 70s was like, oh, yeah, Hendrix did that. No, they were doing it long before. A lot of these guys were doing it long before.
It all came from Johnny Guitar Watson. So if you hadn't heard it before, from 1972, here's the remake from the Steve Miller Band.
False, I'm a gangster. A gangster of love. I jumped in my Waddles Cadillac.
There you go. Here's the original. This is the man on his cherry red Gibson Lucille ES-335, the Gangster of Love, Johnny Guitar Watson on Rock School.
Jesse James and Frank James, Billy Kidd, all the rest. Supposed to be some bad cats out there in the West. But when they dug me and my gangster ways, they hung up their guns and made it to the grave. Cause I'm a gangster of love. Say I'm a gangster of
love. Johnny Guitar Watson. That's great.
Yeah. And when that song starts, and then you start the Willie Dixon, man.
It's almost
the same song, the same playing style.
Now, you were saying that was on a television commercial.
That was on, I think it was the Axe commercial. Nick Lachey was walking around with the little clicker every time the girls would give him a look.
Click, click, and he had like 110.
It gets to the end, and the regular old janitor gets in there, and he shows this little clicker, and he's
got
like
110.
And this guy's got like 1,000.
2,100 or
something. Sure,
like that.
Sure.
And he kind of looks at him like, huh? Yeah, I remember that.
Most people who can pull blues names out of the sky, they'll come up with things like B.B. King.
Right.
They might come up with the name Chuck Berry. They all come up with the name Jimi Hendrix, and you sit there and you think to yourself, well, it all began with these men.
Yeah.
These are the beginning of the timeline. If I told you there was one man that these three, that B.B. King, that Chuck Berry, that Jimi Hendrix all said was their inspiration, a single man. Wouldn't you want to hear a piece of music by him?
Oh, most definitely.
You bet. We're going to play him after we take a pause for the cause. Back in a minute on Rock School. At the beginning of the 1970s, the Allman Brothers put out an album, 1971 if you want to be specific, at Fillmore East. And when you drop the needle
album,
on it,
a
live album. What's really funny is if you look at the front cover of it, two of the members of the Allman Brothers bands are holding little plastic baggies. They just scored their dope for the night. And they're kind of laughing. I'm serious. Go look at the album. Go look at the album cover. They're both holding little baggies. Greg Allman is one of them. And they're both smiling. They had just scored their dope for the night. And you can see it in the picture. But they play a song called Call It Stormy Monday. The actual full title is, now help me, let me get it right. Call It Stormy Monday, But Tuesday's Just as Bad. Do I have it right on the money?
You nailed it. Sometimes it's called Stormy Monday Blues. I think it has several different names, but that's the original. They call it Stormy Monday, But Tuesday's Just as Bad.
Right, and it has been done again and again and again, and when people listen to the Allman Brothers Band version, it's about 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you listen to it and you just, my God, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Who did it first? Well, T-Bone Walker.
Yeah.
T-Bone Walker played this stunningly gorgeous black Les Paul.
Yeah.
And
beautiful guitar.
It played it better than those that came after him. It was one of those where people aspired to it. You look at B.B. King, and people listen to B.B. King, guitarists listen to B.B. King, and they shake their heads and they went, if I could just play like him. Is there anyone that B.B. King shook his head and went,
oh, yeah,
if
T-Bone
I could just
Walker.
Play like
it? He was his influence.
Just.
He's like, I'm going to pick the guitar up, I'm going to start playing. Because T-Bone Walker was one of the first guys to start the electric blues craze.
Right, the Chicago sound.
Yeah.
Right. T-Bone Walker, not even a question. He started electric blues guitar.
Yeah.
Those that came after him, because a lot of people say, who was the first electric blues guitar? Well, John Lee Hooker.
No,
it's T-Bone Walker. This one's a ballad. This one's slow. Stop your car.
Yeah.
Because you're going to want to enjoy this one. Here's the one from the Allman Brothers from 1971, a little snippet of it.
Call it stormy Monday, but
I might have oversold it, but I bet I didn't. Here's T-Bone Walker on Rock School.
You just lay back and enjoy. You just, you know, relaxing.
Put that on a date.
Yep.
Okay, let's move along. That was our one bound. Let's see if we can't pick it up just a little bit. Those who love George Thorogood, most people immediately go, bad to the bone, bad to the bone. And after that, $100 says you go to one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. Well, he, of course, wrote that, didn't he?
No, he did not.
That's a cover. Who did it?
John Lee Hooker, also known as King of the Endless Boogie.
Oh, you know.
Oh, man, just...
The Boogeyman, they call him. Yeah, B-O-O-G-I-E. Epiphone Guitars actually named and built a hollow body guitar for him.
Yep.
They called the Boogeyman. He is one of the original Chicago open body electric blues guitarists.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it's funny because he didn't really get his fame in Chicago. He went to Detroit and made his living. And it was funny because he would go around to the different studios and change his name. One studio, he would be Johnny Lee. One would be John Hooker. And that's how he made all of his money. He worked the system really well.
You don't hear too many Detroit blues.
No.
No, you don't. Detroit was Motown. There was a specific sound out of Detroit, and people didn't really want to play with it because it was kind of like, you know, you open up a can of Coca-Cola, you expect it to taste a certain way. When sounds came out of certain cities, you expected them to sound a certain way. We talked earlier about That's All Right, Mom. My I thinking it was the very first rock and roll song. John Lee Hooker is also in that running. Boogie Chillin', another song of his. A lot of people think that might be the very first rock and roll song. I want to play two more tunes before we get out of here, this one and one more, so let's get into it. This is from 1977, the George Thorogood song. This is the one everybody knows.
Oh, I want bourbon, I want scotch, I want beer.
Well, you all know that one, but this is the original. John Lee Hooker, Rock School. John Lee Hooker right here on Rock School.
What a combination of liquor.
I'm telling you what.
You better drink it in that order, too, or you'd be puking.
I also love it when I hear people talking about all of these rules. Don't follow this with this. Don't mix this with this. Don't, period.
Yeah. You're probably better off.
We are here. We have time for one more, and we got to do it quickly. My thanks to Clayton Cottrer.
Yes, thank you.
Bag of Blues. Can you come back next week?
Oh, yes.
We're going to do a lot more new covers next week, but we'll play a few more blues next week. Can you hang around?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Can you come back?
No, it'd be
really
my
would appreciate it. And by the way, Chad,
what?
Nice job.
Oh, thank you.
You have been juggling compact discs during this show, so nice job on this one. You seldom get a hurrah for the fact that you actually keep the show up and running.
Not a problem.
Well done. We promised you one more from Elvis.
Yes.
So I think most people know that Elvis Presley did not or was not the first person to do Hound Dog.
No.
So go ahead, Mr. Bag of Blues. Can you tell us?
Big Mama Thornton.
Yeah.
And man, she did it probably, in my opinion, I think she did it a whole lot better than Elvis did. Elvis did it. People loved it. But Big Mama Thornton, man, she really put her heart and soul into the recording. Really great recording.
Do you know the song that Janis Joplin redid by Big Mama Thornton?
No, I do not know.
Ball and Chain.
Ball and Chain.
Ball and Chain. Do you know what? When Big Mama Thornton went on stage, she was also a drummer.
Was she?
When she performed on stage, she was the drummer.
And
she also
sang.
Played harmonica.
Oh, sweet.
And she sang. I mean, a real musician. Died in 1984. Oh, guess where she was from also?
Delta, Mississippi.
Can you stand it?
Oh.
It just seems that that's where it all comes from. This is the original from 1956, Elvis to Pelvis.
You ain't nothing but a hound.
Yeah, but this is the one you probably know. It makes more sense being sung by a woman,
yes,
doesn't
definitely.
It? From 1953, this is going to end it. We are done. My name is Joe Burns.
Chad P.
You say your name.
I am Clayton, your bluesologist.
Class is dismissed.
You! Yeah!